Blog Talk Radio.
Bro, you just dissed me for the final time. Bro, you just showed me disrespect. The only course of action left is to take us to the ring. This coming Monday night, we're gonna duke it out for keeper, and I will climb to the top rope and jump and kick you in the face.
Welcome to Marking Out in the Morning. I am your host, The Audacity. It's September 22, just after 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, coming to you live from Audacity Solutions Studios in Des Moines, Iowa. If it is also just after 9 a.m. Central Standard Time for you, 10 a.m. Eastern, you do the math for other time zones, then you know that you can watch live on Periscope or listen live on Blog Talk Radio every morning. We bring you everything you need to know about wrestling. We are the first and only live daily morning call-in pro wrestling news and rumors podcast. No one else is claiming that except us. Look it up. Thanks for joining us. If you want to get in on the action live, you can always hop on the Periscope. If you don't know how to do that, you need to get on Twitter at heelzigler_com. You'll get notified every time we start up on Periscope. If you follow us there, it's a fun way to look at me while I talk, I guess. There's other fun stuff on Periscope. If you don't know about Periscope, check it out. You can also just tweet at me, since I do have my Twitter pulled up in case anyone wants to say anything. I am notified. That's what notifications are all about. Or you can call in 657-383-1786. Just as a friend Kaz has done, I'm going to run through the Monday Night Raw results really quick. I know there's at least one or two people in the Periscope room who have no idea what even happened on Raw last night, so we're going to let them know in great detail very quickly. Anyone listening to the podcast, you're going to get my favorite sound effect because we're about to give out some spoilers. Spoiler alert. All right, last night on Monday Night Raw, the show opened with the Wyatts in the ring, cutting a promo, which eventually brought out Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Randy Orton. Nothing was really resolved, and nothing was officially set up. But infer from that what you will. Kane is backstage as corporate Kane. The mask is missing from the case. He acts like he does not remember last night, i.e. two nights ago, Night of Champions. He apparently has a split personality now. The Lucha Dragons and Neville get revenge, and they defeat the Cosmic Wasteland in a rematch from Night of Champions. Ryback defeats Bo Dallas, while Kevin Owens does a killer job on commentary. And, of course, attacks Ryback after the ring, runs away as soon as Ryback looks like he may be able to fight back. Charlotte celebrates in the ring with a really long, mushy speech that I fast-forwarded mostly through until Paige got on the mic, delivered her version of a pipe bomb. Basically, it was a lot like the AJ Lee promo from a couple of years ago. So that was fun. Then Charlotte defeated Brie Bella in a one-on-one match, while Nikki reminded us she does have a rematch coming up. Sheamus defeated Mark Henry. Rusev and The New Day defeated Dolph Ziggler and the Dudleys. Naomi defeated Natalya, who had a backstage segment with Paige, which makes me believe Paige will probably spend some time with Naomi in a feud while they finish up the Nikki Bella rematch with Charlotte. Big Show defeated Cesaro. Again, I don't know who Cesaro pissed off, but all of a sudden the push to the main event that looked like he was going to be getting has all of a sudden been more about him jobbing to Big Show lately, which really sucks because I don't know anybody who wants to see Big Show And don't know anybody who doesn't want to see Cesaro. Gosh. John Cena defeated Seth Rollins in the U.S. title championship rematch, which was not unexpected. And then post-match, Corporate Kane appeared on the TitanTron as Seth Rollins gathered himself in the ring, teased about Corporate or Demon Kane coming for the World Heavyweight Championship. And then for not at all the first time in pro wrestling, we see Kane come up through a ripped hole in the ring and drag Seth Rollins down under the ring with him, and then they end the show. So I guess Seth Rollins is still under the ring with Kane. As far as we know, they're still down there. So that's what happened on Raw last night. In all honesty, I thought it was a good show. I'm starting to get to where, you know, if you told me a year ago, I would say I don't mind that Sheamus and Kofi Kingston are still on TV. I wouldn't have believed you. But they've made this Sheamus character so ridiculous, I'm starting to kind of like how ridiculous he is. So him being on TV isn't that bad. Kofi Kingston is in his hitting his stride, as is Big E, as is Big Xavier Woods with the New Day. Their Donald Trump parody speech last night was great. Those guys are smart and funny and talented wrestlers. I hope the New Day is here for a while. I love that they are the champions. You know, and everybody else, whatever. Kevin Owens was hilarious on commentary. The Wyatts were as good as the Wyatts always are. Paige's promo was exactly what I needed to keep my interest in the Divas Revolution, because I'm not that pumped about Charlotte. I'm not that disappointed about Charlotte, but I do prefer a Paige and Sasha. That's the feud I'm waiting for, is Paige and Sasha. But Paige had a really good promo ripping everyone in the Divas division, from Charlotte and Becky to the Bellas to Lana and Summer Rae. I'm surprised she didn't rip on the NXT roster, but it was a good promo. Then she confronted Natalya backstage, so that'll be fun. I'm sure she will just defeat Natalya and then go on to challenge Charlotte after Charlotte retains after the rematch with Nikki Bella. But good to see that they Paige had been jobbing out quite a bit lately, so I was hoping something would change for her. So this seems like a good idea. But that's just me, and maybe I don't think the same as everyone else. Kaz, how did you feel about Monday Night Raw last night?
Well, first of all, good morning.
How you doing?
Just waking up here out on the West Coast. But as far as Raw, I agree with you. I think, you know, it was a decent show. It wasn't a, like, grand slam home run, but it kept me interested. And there were some things that were funny. I think, hands down, who would have ever thought that the most entertaining part of Raw would be a musical instrument.
Right? Yeah, man. Sometimes you're not really trying, but Xavier Woods, he just thought, hey, let's try a trombone one day. And man, yeah, that it's perfect, I think, right now.
He's what we like to call money.
Yeah, exactly. And there's like this, I have a friend, Campbell, and I feel like there's probably a lot of guys kind of like Campbell out there who, he is a huge gamer. That's like his thing. You know, he is to gamer what I am to pro wrestling. And, but guys like that often, they kind of appreciate really ridiculous characters. So he saw the New Day recently and thought that was amazing. And if he knew that there was a guy on there who was playing the Zelda victory song every once in a while and doing all kinds of references that go out to huge nerds like that, I think it'd be the internet like lost their crap just from the first time he did the Zelda thing, or excuse me, the Final Fantasy thing. and they find out he just won an award, you know, for hosting a podcast about video gaming. He could lead a whole new Comic-Con generation of wrestling fans back over, perhaps.
Exactly. He's definitely on the pulse of like a younger demographic, and you know, that's a good thing for WWE. You know, I mean, they need that. They need to open that up. But I mean, think about it. Last night he played the Rocky theme. At the pay-per-view, he played the Rocky theme. And then on Raw, he's playing Rusev's intro music, which was hilarious. And,
yeah.
You know, Summer, when Summer Rae was, like, moving the extension of the trombone for him while he was playing, I almost lost it. It was hilarious to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and they timed it so well, too, that when he took the super kick, the trombone fell right into the hands.
Right, exactly. I'm glad that she remembered to catch it and didn't drop it on the floor, because that would have been a major botch. But
yeah.
speaking of major botch, what did you think of Sin Cara's botch?
Man, all I could think was like, the internet is just gonna. They're going to kill him for it, because that's been the number one. That's been at least I used to, when he first showed up, I was a big fan. I like the Lucha style. I didn't ever watch WCW. So I didn't get like that awesome beginning of the cruiserweight division with all the Lucha guys coming in at the very beginning. So, and then like the era when Rey Mysterio kind of came over to WWE was like when I wasn't really watching. So, Sin Cara coming over, I thought he was awesome, and I'm always like pulling for him, both before he was the guy who's wearing the mask now, the original one. I've always wanted to, but every time the internet kills him for botching, and that's all I could think was just like, oh man, this is he's going to be hearing about this on the internet for a while if he pays attention. Hopefully he's one of those guys who doesn't pay attention to the internet, because this would be a terrible time. Although he did just start using Periscope, so that could be bad.
Right. Yeah, you know, it was weird, because when he first fell off the top rope, I thought he had landed on his shoulder. But then you saw him, and he was repeatedly grabbing his right knee. So eventually it looked like it worked itself out. But, while he was getting his marbles back together, it looked like it could have been really bad.
Yeah, yeah, and you can kind of see if you watch it again, because I was kind of doing something else, you know, and I kind of saw out of the corner of my eye, so I rewound it.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
I used the rewind feature on my television, and you can kind of see that he realizes, like, oh, shit, as soon as he does it, and you can kind of see him brace it the way you would take any other kind of fall. So at least he had, like, the mindset to be like, oh, shit. And he kind of just – so that part kind of looked natural, because you could tell he's like, oh, and then just in the middle of it, you can just kind of see it in his body, like, when he realizes, like, oh,
right.
Shit, now I have to, like – yeah. So at least it wasn't – yeah, because I'm sure if you kind of screwed up the last second, I'm sure there's times where you don't have time to adjust and you're even more vulnerable. But, yeah, I was kind of surprised. I didn't realize that, too, until he started holding his knee. And hopefully it's not anything major. There's not been any – well, Dave Meltzer hasn't gone on the internet and said it could end his career, so the world hasn't freaked out about it. My gosh, like, I haven't, like, you know, not until recently have I really paid much attention to internet news and rumors and, like, where they're coming from. And I get that Sting may have really been injured, but, like, Dave Meltzer, he just was on some radio show, and he said this could end his career. And because that guy said it about someone as big as Sting, like, Fox Sports, is like, I read Fox Sports article. It was like the most recent news one about it. And the only source they had was, well, Dave Meltzer said on a radio show. And I was like, oh my gosh, WWE has all that WWE said is like, it's been reported that Sting is injured. We'll bring you updates as we get them. That's like, so they haven't even confirmed he's actually injured. It's all because, and look, I'm admitting it looks really terrible. And it is very possible he's hurt, and I'm not trying to minimize that. I'm just saying, like, there's been no official anything except for Dave Meltzer said it on a show once, and now the whole internet is, like, freaking out.
Well, I think there was clearly, there was clearly miscommunication with the production team as far as not having the monitor removed from the Spanish announce table before, Sting took the bump on the table. I think that was a mistake. They should have, had some awareness about that and made the proper, the proper precautions. So I think they need to be a little bit more detail-oriented when it comes to that, because that they basically put him in danger, that didn't need to be in place.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And especially when you got someone like Sting who's willing to do like whatever, and then but also, one of the obviously the ones you want to be, I don't want to say like handle with care, but you know what I mean? You don't want to give him the biggest bumps or the most dangerous scenarios. So yeah, you can't forget stuff like extremely dangerous metal monitors being in the way. And yeah, and I was kind of surprised. I thought maybe because Rollins finally hit the buckle bomb on Cena that meant like, oh, well, we've seen it once, so he probably won't do it to Sting, and it's probably better that Cena takes it. I was kind of thinking. And then I was like, oh, I guess, nope, they're both going to take it. And that seems like that's one I'm almost surprised WWE lets him do, as like cautious as they are with some of their moves now. I'm kind of surprised they let him do that one.
Yeah, I think with being that it affected the main event so heavily, I was surprised it was still allowed to be done. But again, it's a move that Rollins, does so frequently in his matches, and then people take it. That was just, it's just a freak occurrence that, Sting caught it in a bad way. But again, I think it goes back more so to the bump on the table than it does the corner powerbomb thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff, I guess, that I feel like some of the disconnect when one of the, internet darlings makes a transition to WWE is that part of like what made them so big in the indies was like some of these crazy moves they're able to do, because it's not, in the indies, it's especially not as big, I don't think, to be as, charismatic or whatever as that is when you get to WWE. And so then some of these moves that are like, Sami Zayn's had like he had some amazing moves he used to do. I'm glad they let him do some of them, but I don't know, like Finn Balor, especially, he's one I think of just because his finisher, I don't like his finisher at all. And I feel like he's got something that must look way cooler than like a foot stomp. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even like foot stomps when it's like a 300-pound man and that's supposed to be something dangerous. And I get whatever, it's top rope, but anyway, that's just like a side rant. You don't even have to really talk about that if you don't want. But
no,
I feel like that might be part
of
the part of the disconnect, like why everyone has like big expectations for these indie guys sometimes, and then they come over and it's kind of like, oh, well, okay. But I feel like it's like, well, you didn't know. Like, if you go YouTube his old name and say like top 10, and like you say, like, oh my gosh, Cesaro can do that, or like, he used to do this move like all the time. Like, if you did that, then I would like want him on Monday Night Raw every week,
Right. Yeah, and to that point, it makes you wonder, because everybody says now that Rich Swann has signed with WWE, for a developmental deal or whatever. It makes you wonder, because I've seen Rich Swann do some, really wild stuff in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. It makes you wonder what, if in any way, how he'll be affected if he does indeed come in. His moveset.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And especially unless he's changed dramatically, Vince is not especially fond of you if you're trying to just be who you were without any WWE influence. And so I'm sure he has no problem taking moves away from people and then trying to make them get over, without some of the moves that was like a big part of what everyone, started paying attention to him for. And maybe that's, kind of good as far as like, because it is true, you do have to have, some kind of you know, personality and charisma. Even the Chris Benoit's, their kind of seriousness ended up being, you know, kind of their care, you know, their charisma. So maybe that's a little bit good to make them focus on it, but I'm sure it's just one hurdle they have of whatever, you know, when you're working for the biggest company in the world, I'm sure you do whatever they say to get the paycheck they're going to give you, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? It's like Vince reminds me of like the guy who goes to the strip club and he falls in love with the stripper, and then they eventually get married. And then once they get married, the guy says, well, I don't want you stripping anymore. Well, that's the reason you fell in love with her, is because she was a stripper. And then all of a sudden now you don't want her to do what it is that, you know, that made you love her. It's, you know, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, that is a good analogy. I think I will remember that one whenever I need to try to explain that. But that's exactly right. And and maybe we can, this is kind of pertains to one of the headlines I was going to get into. Sort of a similar kind of ironic thing about Vince McMahon and his perhaps hypocritical way of thinking or whatever. When JBL Legends debuted last night, which is going to be JBL just interviewing legendary wrestling personalities. And last night, the first one was Eric Bischoff as part of a big Monday Nitro network push, apparently. And anyway, one of the things he said was that he gets a lot of that Vince or that Bischoff and Turner get a lot of crap for just having a lot of money and using that in, you know, as a way of kind of dominating the industry, when really that's what Vince did from the very beginning, was just take a bunch of money and go through and say, like, granted, he did give them the option. He said, hey, I'll offer to buy you out so I don't have to run you out of business, is my understanding. But he did kind of just say, like, we're going to be huge and you're not going to be here. And then you're not, you know what I mean? So this is your chance to at least not lose all your money. And then he gets mad when Ted Turner says, like, oh, well, I have even more money, so I guess I'll do the same thing.
Well, I think the difference between Turner and McMahon was, well, in theory, their business practice was kind of the same. The difference is that Vince was actually, you know, he got his money through being a wrestling promoter, whereas Turner was just like the kid who said, oh, you know what, I think I like wrestling, and I think I'm just going to use all my money to, you know, fund that. Where, you know, so that, like, he didn't really have, like, a wrestling background. They didn't have, like, knowledge of how the business works. So I think that's the difference between the two right there.
Yeah, that is true. That's very good. And Bischoff does claim that a lot of it's, spun in a way, but whatever. That's what Bischoff will always say. And he's one who I think will always toot his own horn to make sure we remember that for a minute he was like the man for a minute, whatever. So is there anyone else? No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, in a lot of cases, not all of them, but in a lot of cases, I think Bischoff and Russo, both of them together, they like to incorporate revisionist history. And, you know, not saying that, you know, Vince doesn't do that as well sometimes, but I think it's you know, more often, more so with, like, Bischoff and Russo, where they kind of, like, repaint the picture that it's not exactly the case sometimes. Like, Russo recently making the claim that he's responsible for the success of the Attitude Era. It's like, no.
Yeah.
You know, you were part of that, but you weren't the primary reason that it was successful. I mean, as we saw, you know, when Russo left WWE and went to become a writer with WCW, I mean, his career fell apart. That's because, you know, they need Vince. Vince has the wrestling acumen just in his blood to know what works and what doesn't. You know, I mean, more often than not, and more so than anybody in the industry. So I think, you know, Russo and Bischoff, like, they take credit sometimes where they don't deserve credit.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of people, the wrestling industry, maybe this is all industries, once you really get interested in start listening to what people are saying, but there are a lot of people who try to take credit for a lot of things. So it'll always be interesting. And it'll be kind of always true that WWE will always have like the biggest voice in that, regardless of, you know, what may or may not be true. So the legends the legends of Chris Benoit and for now Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Snuka will be all left to Wikipedia and the IWC. So
I mean just with the recent headlines and whatnot, I don't know, I feel sorry for Tamina because she's already having a tough enough time, you know, getting her footing in WWE because they just don't know what to do with her. And now she has to, like, you know, deal with that at the same time as deal with this, you know, horrible shit that's happening with her dad. I just feel bad for her.
Yeah, and I know last night Paige said that Becky was the least significant person who's involved in the Revolution, and that's only true if you don't count Tamina as part
of
the Revolution, because she's definitely, so that's like, it's tough, and it sucks because she's like not a bad, you know, she's not a bad wrestler or anything, and she's not, and she does like her part really well, but they, you know what I mean, she's, you know, I don't know, it's gonna be tough. Maybe if Nia Jax gets over, because I assume somehow they're related since Nia Jax is like The Rock's cousin, so I feel like they kind of have to be vaguely, if not actually related, or maybe just in that sort of wrestling family way. But either way, Nia Jax seems like she's going to, from what I haven't really seen very much of her, but it seems like she's going to be a Tamina style as far as like look and kind of come across as being really tough. I haven't got a whole lot of a look at her. Do you know anything more about her?
Well, I mean, like you said, she is The Rock's cousin, but as far as being related to Tamina, you know, I mean, I think that's a kind of, you know, I mean, it's a bogus image that you know, WWE creates, because Tamina is Fijian. She's not Samoan as far as I know.
Oh, yeah. So maybe, she was just one, I forget how they said it, she was just kind of always at, I guess it must have been like the Uso family, like barbecues and stuff like that. So I guess maybe that's why treat her like family, but not.
Right, she's a family friend, but, you know, yeah, I mean, I don't think they're related anyway. But nonetheless, I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Nia Jax. Like you, I haven't really, like, seen any of, I mean, I just saw kind of like, you know, what I've seen in the vignettes, but I haven't seen any, you know, full-on look as far as what she looks like. So it'll be interesting if she's, like, you know, big, like, and, you know, kind of thick like Tamina, or if she's more, you know, more slim like Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, it'll be interesting too. And I like that NXT hasn't made the mistake of forgetting that they're losing a bunch of talent, so they need to bring up more divas. So we've got Kana coming through. Eva Marie's going to have her time where she'll be in the ring quite a bit, it looks like. And that'll be interesting if rumors are true that they put the NXT women's title on Eva Marie. I can't imagine what the crowd's going to be, because Bailey is so over at Full Sail University, and Eva Marie is absolutely not over. So if she takes the title from Bailey at Full Sail University, that might be like the most heat an audience could give.
To me, I mean, when I see how over Bailey is with like kids, it really reminds me of like 80s Hulk Hogan as the way he connected with kids. I mean, Bailey is, like you said, she is so over. And if they eventually do put the title on Eva Marie, that's like, to me, that's almost like discrediting everything that Sasha and Bayley did to build up that NXT Women's title.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it'll be, I mean, I know that they really want Eva Marie. I think they want Eva Marie to be like the next Trish, who is like, you know, a really hot fitness type person who then learns how to wrestle. I mean, Nikki was kind of like she never became as good of a wrestler as Trish was, but I mean, she has like, Nikki was not a bad wrestler, you know, by this point, like she's 8 years in and it took her a few years to get there. But she, I mean, she legitimately put the work in and she became, you know, where she can have a really good match with someone like Charlotte or any of the other divas. And so, I know Eva Marie is probably getting kind of a late start and they're giving her a crazy fast push. And all indications would be that even remotely successful, that Amanda from Tuffin will be the next Eva Marie. So it'll be interesting to see if, and I feel like they're going to go and they're going to keep just, it's going to be like Roman Reigns style where no matter what, or Batista, where no matter how much everyone's like, no, do not do this. They're going to be like, yep, it's happening. So just close your eyes and take it, you know?
Well, the thing with Eva Marie is like with her, okay, her personality is just so dry and so non-energetic. Like when she talks, she's just like, you know, she's got no energy. There's no connection there. And when she's in the ring, it almost looks like she's like, you know, going over the match in her head as she's doing it, saying like, okay, now I need to do a slam. Okay, now I need to do a tackle. Now I need to do a drop down. And she's so, the rhythm is so slow that there's, you know, it must be murder for somebody to work with her because she has no fluidity. The speed which she processes what she's doing is just so slow. But the thing with her also too, she reminds me just by her, because she's like 30 now. And she's, you know, just getting the start. It's almost reminiscent of Diamond Dallas Page if Diamond Dallas Page didn't have personality and didn't have ring skill, because he started, you know, in ring when he was, you know, beyond 30. And, you know, but the thing with him is like, you know, he, you know, had the charisma. He had the physical ability, you know, and the way to connect with the crowd. You know, Eva Marie doesn't have that. And for whatever reason, Vince has it in his head that he wants this tall redhead. And don't get me wrong, she's physically hot. But, you know, it takes more than that. And, like, to, you know, if their thinking is, oh, we're looking for the next Trish Stratus, I mean, that's, you know, Trish was once in a lifetime. I don't think, you know, I mean, she... You know, she just had everything rolled into one, and she, you know, every aspect of it, from the physical to the charisma to the connection with the crowd, she just, you know, everything developed perfectly with her. I don't know that they can ever recreate that. I mean, I think it was just the perfect storm at the perfect time. And with Trish, like, she was basically the WWE's version of Pam Anderson. You know, they thought they had their version of Pam Anderson with Sable, but that wasn't the case because Sable just couldn't, you know, keep it up in the ring. And her personality was a little rough. Trish was like, I still, you know, there's a reason Trish is in the Hall of Fame. I mean, she just had it. She just had it, you know.
Yeah, so. For sure. And, yeah, and I'm thinking, too, there's definitely people who like Lita, when she first came out, she wasn't really super charismatic. All she was like, I can't remember the guy who she came out with. I kind of liked him, but I can't remember his name now.
S.A. Rios.
Yeah, S.A. Rios. Yeah, she came out with him, and she was really good in the ring already, but she wasn't like especially good if you got her on the mic. She was just kind of awkward, but she was really good in the ring and she grew into the mic skills. You know, Trish was kind of
naturally
like, she might not have had like great mic skills, but she had really great presence and really great, you know, all that stuff. And then she was athletic enough that she learned how to wrestle and she learned how to do promos, you know, really well. So the problem for Eva Marie is she has to overcome both, learning how to get really good promos and get really good in the ring. And I mean, even tougher for her, this is like when the standards for women's wrestling just got, like, you know, way raised so high, where maybe a few years ago it would be like, okay, well, she can go against Kelly, whatever, you know, and it's not going to, like,
right,
you know,
right,
that would, she would have had a chance. But right now it's like, oh, well, we have girls who are super hot and they're, like, super good at wrestling. So you're going to have to be both. So, yeah.
It reminds me of, like, you know, you see Nikki and Brie Bella, like, don't get me wrong, they've improved tremendously in the ring. To me, they're at the level of, like, you know, maybe like a Molly Holly and, like, a Jazz or, you know, something like that of, like, the late 90s, early 2000s. The problem with that is, like you said, you have Sasha, you have Bayley, you have Charlotte, you have Becky that are, like, years ahead of them, you know, in the ring. So it's a bummer when you see these NXT girls come up and you can tell that they are, like, having to slow themselves down to, you know, allow for the already on-scene divas to, you know, be able to keep up with them. So it's a bummer with that, because I see a lot of those matches and I'm like, especially like Charlotte and Brie. And like I said, Brie has improved, but, you know, unfortunately, her, you know, she's causing Charlotte to have to slow down. And I think that's, you know, that's when the new girls have to slow down, that almost, like, takes away the connection with the crowd.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, it's the same thing, like, you know, kind of like with the reason that some of those indie guys don't get over is because you take away some of their moves. So when you put them in the ring with people who can't keep up, that's the other problem. And that'll be interesting to see, like, Kevin Owens, you know, he got a decent match out of Ryback, whose matches I usually don't get too excited for. But mostly I was excited just because I love that Kevin Owens is the Intercontinental Champion. But so that'll be interesting to see how some of all that plays out, and especially kind of the future for people like Naomi and Tamina and Natalya, and even like Cameron, who she's like trying to rebuild herself right now, but she's again someone who's kind of a lot like Eva Marie, where she needs to build both on her personality and her
exactly. Cameron is exactly in the same boat as Eva Marie, exactly the same.
So, all right, well, enough diva talk for right now. Another rumor they're talking about is that MVP was backstage at Night of Champions, and so everyone's wondering if he may make a possible return, which comes right after everyone started talking about Carlito, because apparently someone from AAA or Lucha Underground and Conan said that WWE was interested in making him the new face to appeal to their Hispanic demographic. Are you interested in MVP or Carlito coming back? And do you feel like either of those rumors have any kind of legitimacy yet?
Well, I mean, I think, well, the two things. First of all, I think MVP and Carlito would be interesting to see them back. I don't know where they would go as far as a role. But then again, you know, there's so much going on with, you know, between Raw, SmackDown, NXT, that there could be a way to work them in, possibly even in NXT, as like to help the younger talent hone their skills and get them ready for the main roster. So I think there could be a way to work them in. But going to what you said about WWE wanting to, you know, make a connection with the Hispanic crowd, I think they have something right there that they're not even – they already have something perfectly in place that they're not even exploiting yet, and that'd be the fact that Bayley is Spanish. Bayley's Mexican. I mean, she would be,
wow,
you know, perfect. If they – you know, she's from out here in San Jose, and if they would really, like, you know, get into her character and get into her background, I think she would be a great ambassador for that.
Yeah, she could be like – maybe like the female Rey Mysterio, because even he's actually, you know, from, you know, the 619, as he says, he had
right,
that Right. Yeah, that appeal.
Yeah, I mean, she's you know, she's not as aerial as Rey, but you know, she definitely is, you know, as solid a worker for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and appeals to that same crowd, like you were saying too, because Rey Mysterio always had, even though he had like a really good skill set, the character and the way they always made him, he never went heel really. He always just kind of appealed to, especially anyone who's going to wear a mask is always going to appeal to younger kids anyway. But
totally,
then, so they just,
totally.
You know, so, and Bayley, obviously, man, with the way they're showing her, that little girl, in NXT, that like, if that's the way they're going to just keep pushing Bayley, like she, yeah, it'll be at least the Rey Mysterio of Divas, if not more like that. Yeah. The Hogan demographic, the John Cena.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I can see her being the next big Make-A-Wish person, too. If she gets on main roster and they keep her the same personality,
yes.
You know?
So,
yeah,
totally,
and, like,
totally.
so many good and, again, this is me trying to think, like, Vince McMahon or, you know, whatever, the corporate people, but, like, so many good photo ops of her giving hugs, you know, at, like, you know, like whenever they stop somewhere and go to like a children's hospital or, you know, whoever, whatever, that's going to be really fun for the PR department. I think they're going to love that.
Yeah. So. I would love to see the marketing department get back on the whole I'm a hugger thing and, you know, get back into that, you know, have that play in a little bit more. I think that was a great, great ingredient to her character. And I think they've kind of backed off it for a little while.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe if as far as hugging, if they want to get hugging back on the program, that was what kind of helped get Daniel Bryan over initially with Team Hell No and hugging it out. Maybe as Kane is confused about who he is and he's trying to find himself, maybe he tries to find someone for hug therapy and it doesn't work out until we get the return of Daniel Bryan and Team Hell No, and that's how they both come back to serious entering action.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, with Daniel Bryan, we may not see him until maybe WrestleMania.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're probably right. And I don't want to
which is a bummer, because when you read his story and you see his, you know, his interviews and everything, I mean, He loves the business so much, but it was just taken away from him. It's sad, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough. And especially him knowing that the doctors gave him the okay, but WWE is just like, nah, let's keep you safe for a while, which is totally understandable. He is, you know, when your toy breaks that many times, eventually playing rough with it, you know. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't in any way you know, think that WWE is doing the wrong thing with him as far as, you know, holding him back for, you know, safety reasons. It's just, you know, it's all around just it's just a bad situation. It's just an unfortunate situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk real quick about ROH. They, right now, there's a big scramble for TNA and ROH and GFW as those three companies all compete for TV spots with anyone to carry their product, as by the end of the year, ROH and TNA will be done with Destination America. So the latest news for ROH, they have a deal in France. They also have deals in Detroit and Charlotte and Philadelphia. At least they're in a few cities here in America and the entire country of France, apparently. How much do you think ROH needs for it to sustain it? So how much TV exposure does a company like ROH need for them to be able to pay their wrestlers?
Well, the thing I recently heard was that Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns ROH, is looking to buy a network. I'm not sure which network they're interested in, but I think that whatever network that they do buy or get involved with has to be a network with a whole, you know, with national exposure in every market, unlike Destination America, because with Destination America, it's like they got in a lot of markets that they weren't in, but still, it was so minimal that, you know, it just didn't really help. I don't think it helped the company at all. I think that in order for them to be able to pay the top talent that they want to have, you know, a network that's available in every market to get that exposure. If they're not going to have that exposure in every market, then it's just going to continue to be the way it is. And, you know, they're going to lose talent here and there. And it's just going to be a rough go for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I talked to one of the guys who lives here in Des Moines. He, as a daytime job, he is works for one of the cable companies. I think he works for Mediacom here in Des Moines, which is one of the two major sources of cable here. And I have DirecTV, and he said that most likely I get Lucha Underground, and I don't get ROH or TNA, because Destination America, you have to have like a really expensive. I have just, you know, the very basic that DirecTV will let me get. And so Destination America is part of, like, I don't know what even package that would be included in, but I don't get that. But I do apparently get Lucha Underground, which says a lot about what kind of exposure those companies really have achieved at this point. So,
yeah. You know, I mean, from what I know and from what I've, you know, looked on their website and whatnot, I think Ring of Honor, they're only, you know, if you don't include Destination America, if you just include the syndicated program, they're only available in one market in California, from what I can tell, and that was Fresno. You know, so if they, you know, want to continue, they need to be in the Bay Area, they need to be in, you know, Northern California, Southern California, they need to be, you know, everywhere, as they need to be in every state, you know. So,
absolutely.
But you know, speaking of Lucha Underground now, I'm very happy to see that they are promoting season two coming up next year.
Yeah. I really don't know much about it, but based on what people have told me, I'm like really interested in, especially if I do already have it on, you know, my DirecTV where I can just TiVo it every week. And yeah, I think I could really get into it because from my understanding, the storyline portions are shot more like an actual, like a normal TV show, and then the wrestling is just kind of interspersed. Is that
right.
How you would
right.
describe it? Yeah, and so that seems like it'd be really interesting, and maybe might be easier to get some, like, you know, sometimes you feel like you want to, like, try to get one of your friends to watch wrestling with you, but then you kind of step back and think, like, yeah, if I didn't really get it, this would look really stupid. But, you know, with all the drama being in weird backstage segments or whatever, but maybe if it's shot more like TV, your friends be like, oh, yeah, this is kind of normal, I guess. And, you know, but, yeah, I'm really interested to check that out. That seems like a really, kind of, like, a fresh way to, like, approach it, I guess, and see how that compares to just doing it the way it's always been done, you know?
Yeah, you know, Lucha Underground, I think it takes a second longer to digest what they're doing as far as their backstage stuff, but their in-ring action is second to none. I mean, it's just incredible stuff.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I need to, especially if I have it on cable. I'm going to go do that as soon as I'm done here. I keep talking about it. I'm going to go as soon as I'm done recording this podcast. Going to go check and see if I have it on my system. And if I do, then start recording it. I feel like they definitely, and I say this all the time, so I definitely feel like they need to find someone like Hulu or Netflix who's willing to, like, invest a little bit of money, get the production value up a little, or maybe not Lucha. This, I'm talking about, like, ROH. But Lucha sounds like maybe they could do the same thing, is get someone like Hulu or Netflix or Amazon to, like, invest a little bit of money for their production value, and then you can release an entire season so people can just binge watch a season of ROH or a season of Lucha Underground, which would be,
you know,
like,
you know what really surprises me is that, like, with, like, Ring of Honor or Lucha Underground or something like that, I'm surprised that, like, HBO or Showtime haven't, you know, looked into that and maybe, you know, picked up either one of those as far as, like, programming for their networks. Because I think it would fit perfect.
Yeah, and especially if you did that, you could advertise it even then as kind of like the adult version, which automatically
right,
makes kids want to watch it, and then kids will absolutely love it if you say, hey, this is on at like 11 o'clock at night on HBO. This is not for kids, you know? So then there's tons of, you know, then it's kind of everyone who's like always bitching about the Attitude Era. You can watch that. Or if, like, you know, your friends come over and you're like, oh, no, this is what wrestling I watch, you can turn on HBO and be like, see, it's not that childish. And, yeah, and finally let people say words like ass. And if it's on HBO, you know, you can finally hear someone actually drop an F-bomb. And
Oh, my God. You know, think about this. Think about this. If ECW would have had that sort of outlet, like, you know, like a cable outlet as far, you know, as opposed to just a syndicated show, if they would have had, like, you know, a Showtime or an HBO platform, they would still be around today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I bet you're absolutely right. And, sometimes I don't understand how people, like, it would be such a minimal investment, I feel like, you would have to put into ROH to get them interested, you know what I mean? Like, you would barely, you know, maybe just you'd have to invest enough to make you comfortable with the way the programming looked. But yeah, especially
right,
like, what else is HBO or Showtime airing at midnight, you know, or 11 p.m. The other people are like, oh yes, please don't skip the rerun of the show Shameless that you put on at 11 on Thursday nights. You know what I mean? Just, you know, give them something where people are actually like, oh, there's like a significant portion of people who really are interested in Thursday night at 11 p.m. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, the only reason that I watched Showtime was because I wanted to see the episode of Banshee where Lana was naked. But other than that, you know, I could care less.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that one out too. I need to.
yeah, I think you should. I think you
All right. And on that note, we will get things kind of wrapped up here a little bit. Why don't you give us a reminder about the post-match podcast?
Well, first off, I'm you know, thanks for letting me come back on again, and I'm glad I could take it to the gutter as we end this week's show.
Absolutely.
you know, post-match podcast is myself and V-Dog. We put it up every Sunday. It's available at mixcloud.com/postmatch, as well as on Podomatic at podomatic.com/postmatch, and we're on Twitter at postmatch1.
All right, very good. And I meant to ask you this, I just remembered, are either you or V-Dog consider yourself trivia experts as far as pro wrestling is concerned?
I don't consider myself an expert at anything except drinking beer, but I know a few things. I saw that you were doing something on Periscope prior to Monday Night Raw. I just don't have the Periscope app, so I couldn't really get involved with that. But I think each of us have a pretty good recollection of historical facts. So yeah, kind of.
All right, very good. Well, we will have to set something up sometime. I have a friend who is he's rather encyclopedic about it, and he likes to challenge other people to see. And then one of our regular Periscope is also kind of an expert himself, so we'll see. Maybe we'll get teamheelziggler.com go up against Team Postmatch Podcast and see who comes out the winner.
Hey, anything is possible. You never know.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I'm going to go ahead and get the Total Divas preview going and the closing stuff here. So thanks for joining us. And everyone, be sure to also check out the Post-Match Podcast. And we will see you again next week, guys.
All right, man. Thanks, man. Peace.
Yep, have a good night. And so as we wrap up the show, I'm going to give all of you listeners a preview of Total Divas tonight. This is the preview that was available on YouTube and regarding some drama between Naomi and Alicia.
You look cute. I love that dress.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Supposed to be closing on my house today.
Did you get what you wanted?
I did. I got asking price for it.
Nice.
Which in... Florida is, I mean, with the market being what it is, but it's just that it's in a really good location. Like, when we first bought that house, I knew that I wanted to buy in a location that was good. It's in West Chase. Hey, Trent.
Yeah. Where's Fox?
I know you.
Fox, why did you post that of me on Instagram?
Post what?
Me twerking.
You gotta do it. Twerk tutorial.
Damn, are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
That thing has a mind of its own.
Now my husband gonna see that and be flipping out. Not only did you record me without me knowing, but you posted it, so you know my husband's gonna see it.
You're the one that twerked it. You didn't want to twerk. Like,
well, damn, if I knew you was gonna record it and throw it on Instagram, I wouldn't have did it.
All right, so that is Total Divas tonight. If you're interested, we'll give a brief recap next week, tomorrow morning. And just as a reminder, we are available on iTunes. We are available on Stitcher Radio. We are available at Blog Talk Radio. We're available on YouTube. We're available on Periscope. Follow us on Twitter at heelzigler_com. Thanks for listening today. And I'm going to play the closing audio and be done with all of you. So thanks again for joining us. Marking out in the morning. We'll be back tomorrow. See you guys.
Marking Out in the Morning is proud to be recorded in Des Moines, Iowa at Audacity Solutions Studios. You can check us out at heelzigler.com. Follow us on Twitter at heelzigler_com. The song you hear at the beginning of the show was recorded in Des Moines, Iowa by my friend Campbell D'Souza with recording studios of Phil Young. You likely also heard the song Parsec by the artist Arno Puros, which I downloaded for free at noisetrade.com, the album Timelines, and got permission from Arno Puros on Twitter for that. I also downloaded the song you're hearing right now at noisetrade.com. It is by a band called Ampersand. The song is called Aurora Borealis. It's on their album Trial and Trial, available for free at noisetrade.com. I haven't got their permission for this yet, but I hope to do so in the future. I agree with that, so we'll see what happens. You may also hear more dress song that would be ready set fire by a website called incompetech.com, where you can download stuff like that too for your own good, royalty free. Marking Out in the Morning is here every morning, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. You can subscribe to our podcast iTunes or Stitcher. Just search for Audacity Solutions Podcast. And of course, you can listen live every day or listen to the entire archive at blogtalkradio.com/Audacity Solutions.